Beloved Book One, lately I have been feeling very insecure, and I see how much I dislike that space of not knowing. And then I try all kinds of stupid things to control the situation. I feel as if it is such an imprisonment, and at the same time, I have a deep feeling in me that knows that this is how life is, and I should accept it. I find it very difficult to watch myself, and the insecurity comes up even more. Could you please comment?
Anubhasa, we are trained in wrong ways. Otherwise, security is something to be afraid of, and insecurity something to be rejoiced. What exactly insecurity is? It means tomorrow is not going to repeat today. It means tomorrow you may not be even alive. It means that one has to live each moment as if it is the last moment. A life of security will be simply boring. It will be like seeing the same movie again and again and again, knowing every detail what is going to happen. You can enjoy a movie only once. If you are an idiot, then it is another matter. Insecurity is the very fabric of life. If you don't understand insecurity, you can never understand life. Seasons will change, climates will change, the fall will come, the spring will come, everything will go on changing. Nothing can be taken for granted. This is the insecurity. And you want everything to be certain, permanent. But have you ever thought what will be the outcome of it if everything is permanent? You eat the same food every day. You talk the same things every day. You listen the same things every day. And there is no death. Even to demolish this tragic living, you are living in a nightmare. Insecurity keeps people fresh, alive, adventurous, knowing that things can be changed. Even without their changing, they are going to be changed. So there is great scope of change, of transformation. An ancient saying says, the authentic man is one whom the sunrise never finds where the sunset leaves him. Or where the sunrise leaves, the sunset never finds him there. He is always on the move. He is a flow. He is not a dirty pond going nowhere. But our whole training of the mind is such that we are made afraid of insecurity. And our whole life we are trying for safety, financially, politically, religiously. In every dimension we want to be secure. But security means death, a living death. That means tomorrow will be simply a repetition of today, and today is a repetition of yesterday. Are you living? Is there a dance in your life? Are you moving, growing, risking? taking the challenges of dangerous paths in the acceptance of the danger, in the acceptance that anything can happen any moment, life comes to its best, to its fullest. Your question is, Anubhasa, lately I have been feeling very insecure, and I see how much I dislike that space of not knowing. You are completely upside down. You will have to change your posture. Security is not the space that has to be disliked. It is the space that has to be loved and cherished, celebrated. That tomorrow will bring new news. And because of the fear of insecurity, you are also fearing not knowing. And not knowing is the highest peak of consciousness. But certainly you must be afraid of peaks, because you can fall from there. You would rather like the plain asphalt road, no danger of falling from there. You would like to be the lowest point in consciousness, because from there you cannot fall. Millions of people have decided to live at the minimum for the simple fear that from the maximum you can fall. It is safer to live at the minimum. It is more safer not to live at all. Nobody has ever heard that dead people are insecure. Graveyards are the most secure places. Once you enter your grave, now there is no fear. Even death cannot do anything to you. One cannot die twice. Man has been trying to create false props for security. Knowing perfectly well, they all fall down. But still he goes on compiling all around him props. Time does not care about your props. Neither life cares about your problems. In fact, it is compassionate of nature that whatever you do, you remain insecure. You can have a bank balance, you can have a big insurance, but these are just strategies to befool yourself. What insurance can be against death? What insurance can be against constantly changing flux of life? You cannot prevent it. It is a mountainous river flowing fast, dropping from high mountains into waterfalls, moving into valleys, towards the ocean where it will disappear completely. The idea of safety has created the idea of accumulating knowledge. Nothing should be left unknown, because unknown creates insecurity. If it is known, you feel safe. In small things even, you are continuously trying to know. Even if you are traveling in a train with a passenger, you immediately want to know his name, where he is going, what religion he belongs to, what is his profession. You may not have thought that this is a way of feeling safe about the man. Otherwise, who knows? You may be traveling with a madman, and in the middle of the night he may sit on your chest. That's why people are always afraid of strangers. They become uneasy even if you start living your own style of life, not following the crowd. That means you are becoming an outsider, an stranger. So people go on filling their heads with all kinds of knowledge, most of which is simply rubbish and crap. People become walking encyclopedias. In my village, I used to know a Brahmin. He was a little cuckoo. I have never come across another man like that. He has crammed the whole Oxford Dictionary. That was his great achievement. You could ask the Oxford Dictionary meaning of any word, and he was almost like a computer. He will immediately give you exact words that the Oxford Dictionary says. And he was living under the wrong impression that he knows English language, by cramming the Oxford Dictionary. One cannot know English language. Language is a living phenomenon. It comes through dialogue. It comes through the contact with living people. The Oxford Dictionary on the margin may be helpful, but just the Oxford Dictionary, he was not able even to make a single sentence. Because in the Oxford Dictionary there are only words. He knew the whole language and still he was not able to make a single sentence. This is the situation of the scholars. They are afraid of their not knowing, and they go on piling up scriptures over their not knowing, covering it up, thick layers of knowledge, but underneath they are as ignorant as ever. Ignorance has not to be covered, but transformed into innocence. Ignorance has not to become knowledgeable. Ignorance has to become a feeling of the mysterious and the miraculous in existence. This is the way of religious man. The scholarly man is never religious, cannot be. Your whole approach, Anubhasa, is categorically wrong. Not in part, but absolutely. You have to understand that insecurity is the very nature of life. There is no way to avoid it. And when there is no way to avoid it, the only wise way is to enjoy it. When it is impossible to avoid it, Why go on hitting your head against the wall? Then it is better to transform insecurity as a beautiful experience. In fact, it is that. Man can never demystify existence. He can never become all-knowing. The desire to become all-knowing is dangerous. In this ambition of becoming all-knowing, so that you can be safe, the possibility is you may collect much information, and in collecting information you will forget one basic thing, that you have to go through a transformation. And information is not going to help you at all. You need a transformation of your consciousness. And by transformation you will not become a knower. You will become more and more a mystic. Each and everything in life, from the smallest grass leaf to the biggest star, it is all mysterious. Neither Holy Scriptures has any answer for it, nor science has any answers for it. Although they both go on proposing hypotheses, religion tries to propose a hypothesis of God, that He created the world. This is really pitiable. It has nothing to do with authentic religiousness. It is a childish effort to forget your ignorance. Nobody has witnessed any God creating the world. By the very nature of the fact, nobody can be a witness. Otherwise, the world was already there. Somebody was there to witness. But man's stupidity knows no limits. Christianity believes God created the world. This is not enough. We have to know exact year, date, day in detail. And they have calculated. Nobody knows how they have come to this calculation, because they have not given the process of their calculation, that God created the world 4,004 years before. Of course, it must have been Monday and 1st January. because he cannot start in the middle of the year. In fact, wherever and whenever he started, that was the 1st January. How can calendar exist without a world? And it raises 1001 questions which Christian theologians have not been able to answer, not even a single one. What God was doing for eternity, and why He created the world exactly 4004 years before Jesus was born. What is the secret of it? And where has been this fellow before? And the more basic question is, from where he comes? Who produced him? Is he an orphan? With no mother, no father? Who created him? If the world needs a creator, then the God also needs a creator. The hypothesis can satisfy only very childish mind, and can give them security. But millions of people are in that space, in temples, in synagogues, in mosques. They are praying to a God, which is just a hypothesis. Someday, when man comes really of age and maturity, they will laugh at us that what kind of idiots, the whole history is full of. They create the hypothesis and they worship the hypothesis. 2 + 2 = 4, that is a hypothesis. But you never worship it, or do you? Just writing 2 + 2 = 4, and then flowers, and devotional songs. But your God is not better in any way than 2 + 2 = 4. But science is not in a better position either. They say at a certain point, near about 4 million years, their calculation is as bogus as religious calculation. 4004 years are 4 million years are 4 billion years, but how do you come to that conclusion? It is simply whimsical. The world came into existence out of an explosion. Explosion of what? They have removed God. Now, instead of God, it is explosion of energy. But that means the energy was there. And if the energy was there, the existence was there, Gautam Buddha seems to be more logical. Mahavira seems to be more logical. They don't believe in the creation at all. They have simply denied that the world has ever been created. It has always been there. And it will be always there, changing its forms. But you cannot conceive a point when the world was not, and then suddenly it was there. It is not logic, it is magic. A moment before, there was nothing, and a moment after, there was everything. God seems to be a street magician. But the street magician knows only tricks. Out an empty cap, he brings birds. But they are hidden in the empty cap. He creates the illusion that the cap is empty, but it is not empty. Gautam Buddha is right when he says the very idea of the creation of the world is foolish. It will lead to more stupid answers and questions. But why people want to know such things? There must be a psychological need and an universal psychological need. This is the need. Safety, knowing that God created the world, you feel at ease. It's strange. I have never felt any unease whether God created the world or not. Who cares? In what way I am related to that creation. It does not affect me this way or that. I am ready to accept the mystery of life. And I am against all those people, whether religious scholars are scientific researchers who are going to satisfy your fear of insecurity by giving you hypotheses. Even science could not control its temptation. And accept the mysteriousness of existence, that we don't know. Not even a single scientist has been so courageous to say that we don't know. In fact, the whole project of science is that slowly, slowly our area of knowledge is growing and the area of our ignorance is decreasing. Logically, it can be inferred that one day, somewhere in the future, it may take millions of years, a point will come when everything will be known and the whole area will be covered by knowledge and there will be nothing left to be known anymore. I cannot agree with this. Yes, science tries to know things, but that does not demystify them. It simply pushes the mystery a little back. You split the second, you split the atom. Soon you will be able to split the sperm. And then you say that the atom consists of electrons, protons, and neutrons. And you think you have provided the knowledge, but the question is why the atom consists of electrons, protons, and neutrons. The mystery is not dissolved, it has become more subtle. The man of understanding will accept that insecurity is the very fabric of life and that not knowing is the counterpart of the miraculous and the mysterious existence. We know nothing. All that we know is very superficial. And all that we know goes on changing. Which seems to be so certain today becomes uncertain tomorrow. Have you observed that for almost 30 years there have not been written any big volumes on science, only periodicals, monthly publications, and people don't write big books for the simple reason that by the time their book will be finished, it will be out of date. So much is the explosion. All old theories become wrong, new theories come in, all old hypotheses drop dead, new hypotheses arise like phoenix out of the ashes of the old hypotheses. And they know perfectly well that these are also going to fall. If you are trying to write a complete history of something scientific, you are wasting time. So scientists only write papers, not books. Read papers, not books. Because a paper can be read in a university or in a conference of the scientists, at least it is real, true, at that moment. Nobody knows about tomorrow. People used to think that Albert Einstein will never be refuted. He is refuted. He is no more the giant he used to be. Inch by inch, all his theory of relativity has been criticized, and better proposals have come into being. But now one thing is certain, because 300 years experience of science is that no theory is going to become authentic knowledge. It is only a temporary hypothesis. Somebody with a better intelligence, with more logical acumen, with better scientific equipment is going to demolish it. Charles Darwin is no more accepted. The idea that man has come from the monkeys or apes is very appealing. Looking at the man, it needs no proof. But for millions of years, monkeys have remained monkeys, man has remained man. Neither we see some people reducing back towards monkeys, going up the trees and growing tails and jumping. Nor we see another modern monkey getting down from the trees, standing on the 2 feet and declaring that now I am a human being. There has not been a single scientific theory which has remained true. Everything has changed, and everything is changing so fast that perhaps in the future even papers will not be possible to read. One of the great mathematicians, perhaps the greatest mathematician, Godel, was writing a book on mathematics. His lifelong effort, he wasted 40 years to give to the world a complete book on mathematics. there will be no need of any improvement in it. And he was a great genius. And when he was coming to the conclusion of his book, Bertrand Russell demolished the whole book of 40 years just by a small puzzle. Bertrand Russell was also a mathematician. He has also written a very great book on mathematics, Principia Mathematica, which I don't think anybody ever reads, except few crazy people like me. He has come to know about a problem that the government of Britain has ordered all the libraries to make a catalogue how many books they have. Keep one of the copy of the catalogue in the library and send another copy to the central government library, so we know how many books are in the whole country. The librarians made the catalogue, and finally few intelligent ones became very disturbed what to do about the catalogue that they are keeping in the library, because that has become a big book itself. Should it be included in the catalogue? And if they don't include it, then it is against the order. The order says all the books in the library should be included in the catalogue. So according to the order, the catalogue has to be also included. But it looks very foolish that the catalogue includes itself. But they were small librarians. The idea came and puzzled them, but they thought, we should not worry. Send them to the central library. And to the central library, the order was the same. They should make a catalogue of all the catalogues. Keep one copy with them and send the other copy to the government. And the man there was far more educated, far more intelligent, and he could not figure it out what to do, whether to keep the catalogue also included in the catalogue itself. That looks ridiculous and hilarious. But not to include it goes against the order. So he inquired Bertrand Russell that you are a great mathematician. You have to solve this puzzle. Bertrand Russell worked over it but could not find out any solution. Everything was wrong. If you put it in the catalogue, that does not look right. The catalogue itself is catalogued in itself. If you don't keep it in the catalogue, that is not right. because the catalog is in the library and you have left one book uncatalogued. Remembering of Godel, the old man, who was world famous mathematician and who was known that he is completing a book on which he has worked for 40 years, and perhaps no mathematical book will ever be so complete, so exhaustive. He sent the puzzle to Godel, and he was just completing the final chapter, the last pages. And his whole hypothesis was that mathematics can solve all problems. But he could not solve the problem of this catalogue, whether to include it in itself or not. And he became so sad that just a small thing cannot be solved by his whole mathematical experience, he did not publish his book. He became so frustrated, he sent the puzzle back to Bertrand Russell and told him that, "I am not going to complete the book and I am not going to publish it, although I have wasted my whole life on it. But what is the use? It cannot solve a simple thing." Science is an effort to demystify existence in every way. And that's what theology has been doing before science, to demystify everything. God created the world that makes you safe. God is the Father that makes you secure. He will take care of you. Everything is decided by God. Of course, it cannot be against you. God is compassionate. That was Mohammedans say, Rahman, Rahim. He is kindness, he is compassion itself. So don't be worried about anything. Even all your sins will be forgiven, because his compassion is far bigger than you can commit sins. How many sins you can commit in a small life of 70 years? If you go on committing sins day and night without taking time for eating and sleeping and bathing, just sins and sins and sins, a continuum from cradle to the grave, even then you cannot commit as many sins as great is the compassion of God. You will be forgiven. It gives great safety. a great consolation. Just believe in God. Theology was trying to create safety, consolation, security. And then science has taken over from theology on a more pragmatic basis. And is doing the same thing, just giving you a false idea that you need not worry, science knows all. The very word science means knowing. But I want to insist again and again to you, neither theology nor science nor philosophy, no effort of man can demystify existence. You need to be courageous to accept the insecurity. Not only accept, but rejoice in it. You have to rejoice in the mystery of existence. The trees, the oceans, the mountains, the stars, everything is mysterious. From the smallest pebble on the beach, to the whole universe, everything is so mysterious that there is no possibility of knowing it. Not knowing is the way of the mystic. Insecurity is the way of the mystic. And to be a sannyasin is to be on the path of the mystic. Anubhasa, if you change your basic standpoint, which is wrong, utterly wrong, then your whole problem disappears. And then you are capable of dancing amidst all insecurity. You are capable of loving and laughing amidst all not knowing. Not knowing is nothing but innocence, and insecurity is nothing but a constant changing panorama. Always fresh and new. Nothing is repeated in existence. You must have heard the saying that history repeats itself. History repeats itself because history consists up to now of stupid human beings. Existence is so intelligent, it never repeats itself, it never creates another Jesus, another Moses, another Buddha, another Chuang Tzu. another Socrates, it simply never repeats. Its creativity is tremendous, inexhaustible. Yes, the history of man repeats itself. Because the life of man is a routine. If you look at your life, you go on repeating it. Slowly, slowly the repetition becomes your efficiency. And you become almost a robot. You lose your consciousness. Consciousness is needed only if each moment is new. Because you have to respond to a new situation. Old answers won't do. It is a great blessing that life is insecure, love is insecure. And fundamentally, we are in a state of not knowing. So we can be childlike, running after butterflies, collecting seashells on the beach, or colored stones. As if they are diamonds. And enjoy in all of them. In my childhood, I used to have as many pockets as possible. My tailor used to be very angry with me that you will spoil my credit. Nobody will come to me for their clothes to be made. But what kind of dress is this? That four pockets in front, pockets even on the arms, pockets on the pants, not only two, four. He said, you are mad and you are driving me mad. I said, I need all these pockets because I love the river. And I find so many beautiful stones that all these pockets fall short. And whenever I will be coming home full of stones, I will go to bed even with full of stones. And everybody was angry that, what do you think these stones are, diamonds, are emeralds, are rubies? I said, I don't know, but they are immensely beautiful. And I cannot sleep without my treasure. It feels good that they are close to me. not knowing is nothing but innocence. These two are very foundational things, insecurity and not knowing. If you can relax in these two, you are a sage. You are awakened. If you go against these two, you are going against your own enlightenment, against your own possibility of being a sage.
Beloved Bhagwan, it is a shattering, an upheaval from the depths. Tears pour through the cracks, washing the stones into jewels in the moonlight. My eyes are naked and unprepared for this garden, blooming, silent and unknown in the darkness. Blossoms in the night. Bhagwan, is it possible? Is it real? And tears, tears, tears. Bhagwan, I have become just eyes in the night, and your blessings are the morning dew.
Devagit, the tears of joy the tears of peace the tears of silence are the most precious things you have. Laughter cannot reach to that height. No words are capable to express the beauty of the tears. Your eyes are the most transparent part of your body, and your tears come directly from your very heart. It is a silent dance, a very silent music. One should not think of it as a shattering experience. In a way, it is shattering. It shatters that which is false in you, but it cleanses and brings into light that which is real in you. Don't pay the attention to the dying false. It has never been alive. It was only a pretender. Focus your whole consciousness on the uprising of the real. That is your very being. The tears are welcoming your very being and its discovery. You are asking, is it possible? Is it real? Yes, Devagit, it is possible. It has to be made possible for everybody. And it is the most real thing in you. Nothing is comparably real than your tears. But the tears have a negative side too. If they come out of sadness and suffering and misery, then they are negative. Then they create a dark night around you. But if they come out of joy and bliss and ecstasy, they create a great light within you and without you. And that's what is happening. You are saying, it is shattering an upheaval from the depths. Tears pour through the cracks, washing the stones into jewels in the moonlight. My eyes are naked and unprepared for this garden, blooming, silent and unknown. In the darkness, blossoms in the night. Is it possible? Is it real? And tears, tears, tears. I have just become eyes in the night, and your blessings are the morning dew. Devagit, what is happening to you is expected to be happening to everybody who has become intimate to me, who has come close to me. Not physically, but spiritually. It is a great moment to welcome and to rejoice and to dance to abandon. You are coming out of your grave. You are going through a resurrection. The funeral procession was reaching the top of the hill when the rear door of the hearse burst open. To the horror of all, the mourners, the coffin slid out and then proceeded to bounce and clatter its way down the hill. At the bottom of the hill, its speed carried it right through the open doorway of a chemist's shop. Before the appalled surprise of the chemist, it crashed into the counter, causing the lid to fly open. For goodness sake, said the corpse, give me something to stop this coughing. You are coming back. Out of the coffin. It must have been a long journey. And must have been very shattering. But it brought the dead man back to life. You are coming back to life. You have been dead. Now you will know life for the first time. And millions are the people in the world who are living in their coffins. And don't know what life is. Experiencing life in its totality and intensity. Is to know the only significance and meaning of existence. That's the only way. No philosophical thinking. Can make you aware of the tremendous meaning and the beautiful blossoms and the immortality of your being. Then the juice of life drinking the juice of life is the only way there has ever been of finding godliness in the stones, in the trees, in the rivers, in people, in animals, in the birds. The whole existence is full of vibrating life. Just we should be in a right tuning, and then suddenly everything becomes such an ecstasy you could not have conceived it before. Just to welcome your tears, a joke for you. A layman and a vicar were playing golf, and the layman was not having a good game. Ah, then he missed. Said the layman, at the first green, and then missing an easy putt, he said, ah, then I missed again. The layman kept on playing a bad shot and kept saying, ah, then I missed. The vicar put up with this for half the round, but then he felt he owed it to the dignity of his calling to say something to the layman. You really must not keep using such dreadful language, my dear sir, said the vicar, or the Lord may well strike you down. And just as the words were out of his mouth, there came a jagged flash of lightning, and in a split second, the vicar was burnt to a crisp. Above the rolling thunder clouds, a deep voice was heard to say, ah, damn, I missed.
Yes, Bhagwan.